This is an interview with Mr. Edward Humphrey for the Youngstown State University. The project is labor relations in the steel industry in Youngstown in the 30s, conducted by Emmett C. Schaefer at Mr. Humphrey's home on 19 July at 1 p.m. Mr. Humphrey is 76 years old. Mr. Humphrey, how did you get started into the labor movement?
Well, I first started in the labor movement the simple reason that I thought that we needed an organization. And what happened was that after I started to work and I was approached to join the Steel Workers Organizing Committee. It was started by John Owens and Phil Murray. They were the two big shots that come in out of the United Mine Workers, started to organize. And there was a bunch of the fellows that were working in the mill at that time that they asked to become like assistant organizers, and they gave us badges that I've got around here yet. So when they started to organize the shooting tube, there was a lot of the good men down there that was really interested in better working conditions for the plant there. And they also started to organize the Republic. And of course, at that time, why I hadn't had much experience on organizing, but I did my share of it. And I made friends with Vern Halsey, and Vern Halsey, he gave me my introduction to the labor movement, you might say.
What year was this?
That was back around in, it was in the 30s. I don't remember just when it was, but it was after they brought out Camel.
And what bill?
And I was at the Republic Iron and Steel at the time. And right after, I imagine it was around about 37 that I left the Republic and went down to the sheeting tube and worked in the line electric department, because I was told at the Republic that I couldn't be raised a first class man unless I had experience from someplace out in one of the other plants. And I was told to go down the sheeting tube and work down there for a while. And when I got ready, after I'd been there for a while, to come back, and Charlie Schuster would take me back in the Republic. And that was the only way I could get raised to first class lineman. But what really got me started, that I went all out, was when we started organizing stop it a minute. So we started in on the fabricators, the fabricating plants around, and we started to organize the TrustCon, and we started in on the ironworks that's out there. And the Mackenzie Muffler and several of the other fabricating plants that I was in on. And we finally got them started and got their officers all set up and had local unions. At that time, why, the little local union didn't have any place to meet. But I was one of the chief men at the Youngstown Steel Door. And we organized that. And I was the first financial secretary. The layoff come, and we didn't have it in the contracts then that the officers of the unions and the stewards had top seniority. So we was all laid off according to their plant seniority. But after we got straightened around there and went in for the next contract, or when we went into the contract, then we put it in that the seniority, the stewards in the department and the officers all held top seniority. But being that the fabricators did have no place to meet, the Youngstown Steel Door Local 2310 took it on themselves to go and borrow money and build the hall in the Gallagher building up over Pentran's Saloon. And we built that hall up there, and then we took all the little locals in there. And finally the Briar Hill local come in with us, and we all met up there. But the way that the thing worked out, when the layoff come, the president was laid off, and the vice president of the company and I were real good friends, and I finally talked to him, and I got back in the plant, and as soon as I got in the plant, seeing what the score was, why, I went after them then to bring the president back. They brought the president back, and he come back for about 2 weeks, and he quit. And then we held an election, and I was put in as president. I was president of the Steel Door Union then for about about 10 years.
What year was this?
That was that carried us up into the 40s.
What year did you actually start organizing the steel door?
Oh, we started, I think, shut it off once.
What year did you start organizing the Steel Door?
Right between 33 and 34.
Would you discuss just how you went about organizing your union and who was involved?
Well, the way that we organized the Steel Door, the AFL had started to come in there, and me being an old IBVWAFL man, why, I knew what the score was, and I wanted the CIO. At the time I was running the crane, and I put a big CIO on the front of the crane. And a lot of the fellas started asking, and that was in the paint shop. And before the week was out, we had all of the painters signed up and some of the car blockers. And Halsey set up a meeting for us, and we called, we had close to 100 men that come in, and we signed them up, and we finally got going around 40 or about the latter part of 34, that we went in after a contract, and Halsey was the mainstay of the local union. It was Vern Halsey. And between Halsey, Joe Cummings, and couple Eddie Jones, colored boy, and who my first vice president was, but we got around to the different departments, and we started to sign them up. We got the majority of them signed up within about between 2 and 3 months. Then we went in after the contract. They asked us how many men that we had signed up. Told them all but 3. And the outcome of that was that, I forget what the president's name, he was just sitting in on the meeting. He was from Cleveland. And stop that until I think we see if I. Harold Hendricks, the vice president and manager of the Steel Door at the time, laughed about that we had so many men sign up in such a short time. And the president of the company was also at the meeting. He says, "Are you sure that you've got them?" I told him yes. So they said, "Well, we'll negotiate on it." So we set up a date for negotiation. And there were some of the things that we wanted that they didn't want to give us in the first contract. And we brought it up at the meeting, and they voted to set up a picket line. And we helped set up a picket line, and all the men that we needed was five men. When the boys started to go in, no show bullets, they won't give us the contract. And they turn around, need any help? No, okay, and turn around and go home. And finally wound up that the second day, the vice president sent the security man up to get me, to bring me down. And I went, when he come up, I picked up or got two of the fellas that was on the line there with me, and we went up to the office, went in, and the president and the vice president was, and the treasurer was sitting in there, and I think it was the president says, "Have you really got those men all signed up?" I said, "Yes, we have. The only thing is, there's three or four men in there that will not, there wouldn't sign up." He says, "No, this is the three or four that you was figuring on catching." I said, "No, we didn't figure on catching anybody. We wanted to know just how they felt about these people not giving us what we was asking for in the contract." He says, "Well," he says, "you call up the picket line and come in tomorrow morning and we'll negotiate." So that's what happened. We went in and negotiated the next morning, and we got the majority of the stuff that we was asking for in the contract, and they set it up, and they wrote up the contract, and let's see, who the devil did sign it? Mayo was the first one that was in. Jim Quinn was the man that signed his name on our first contract. But Halsey was the man that done the majority of the talking. And I come in with a soft open. After Halsey bat him down, I come in and soft open. That's the way that we got the majority of it. But Harold Hendricks was really a nice man to negotiate with. He would reason with you. He didn't try to bulldoze you or anything like that. He'd reason with you. And he used to tell me lots of times when I'd be good after something, I'd say, "Now, you'd like to have that, wouldn't you, Harold?" And he'd say, "There, Duke, quit putting words in my mouth."
How many employees were employed at Steel Door?
At that time, there was around 600.
You had all but four signed up?
All but four, yeah.
What was the provisions of the first contract?
Well, the provisions of the first contract was that we wanted union recognition, and that we wanted the officers and the stewards. See, we had the plant-wide seniority after it went down to a certain level, and we had departmental seniority until it went down to a certain level, then it went plant-wide seniority. And the way that it worked out, the shop steward in the department, he tells top seniority, regardless of whether a fellow was there 10 years or whether he was there a year, but he would hold top seniority so that we would know what was going on in the department and that they'd have somebody there to take their gripes to.
Did you get a raise in pay?
No. Yes, I think. No, not on the first one.
And
the first one, we wanted recognition more than anything else. And but on the second contract, we did go in for a raise. But on the first one, we wanted recognition and so that we could negotiate.
And what year was this?
That was around 33 or 34.
The strike lasted only 2 days. Was there any violence?
There wasn't no strike. All that happened, three of us sat out there in three. There was three cars sitting along the road when the fellas started to come in, saying no soap, they won't recognize it. Okay, they'd ask if you needed any help. They turn around and go back home, and we stayed there until maybe 1 o'clock in the morning. And then we'd be out there at 7 o'clock the next morning, and then we'd be there at around 3 o'clock. We made three shifts of it, and well, I was generally always there at all of them, but we had different fellows that that come out. But we never had no trouble out at our place. There was no violence. There was. Some fellas tried to sneak in their cars because you went into the parking lot inside the plant, inside the fence, and they'd have a fella that wouldn't be signed up. He'd be in the trunk and get out and go in with them inside the fence. But we caught one of them because they put the trunk open. they had to bar the trunk open to get him out. And afterwards, he signed up. And he says, if I knew I was going to have to stay in there that long, way, I'd have signed up long ago. I said, well, that was your own fault. But we didn't have no violence. In all our dues line, picket lines, we never had no fights. We've had guys give us an argument, but we generally always convinced them that they were wrong, and we had several good talkers on there who could give you a lot of convincing. So, but we never did have no real violence there.
Just what kind of procedures was used to sign up most of these 6,000 employees?
600.
For 600 employees.
Yeah. Well, go to them and talk to them here. We're figuring on a union in here. How about going along? Well, he said, okay, well, we signed him up. If he says, oh, I don't know about it, I said, well, I used to tell him, well, think about it. I'll be around to see you again, because the majority of the boys are signing up. Now, you know yourself that if we don't have something to negotiate with the company, how are we going to get the stuff that's going on in the plant that is wrong? How are we going to get it fixed up? And that was the way that I talked to them, and I imagine the rest of the boys talk to them the same way. But as far as forcing anybody, the only three that was forced, the union didn't force them. The company told them, here, these fellas are all signed up in here. We don't want no trouble. Now you either go along with the union, or we'll put you on a job that you're not under the union. See, we didn't have the operators under the union. And one of the four wouldn't sign up. And they took him and put him in the office at the time. So that was, that was another thing that happened there. The company was, it shows that the company really meant right. And because they could talk to the, they called the men in and told them, here's the whole thing in a nutshell. Now, either join the union or we'll put you on a job that you're not under the union. Now, which do you want to do? And the best part of it, one of them that would, didn't want to join the union, at the following election, he was elected vice president. And he was worse than any of the rest of them. He was more rabid. He had quieted him down several times.
Did you get the check-off system in your first contract?
No, we didn't get the check-off system. The check-off system would, didn't come in until about the third contract that we put in.
Who was Jim Quinn?
Jim Quinn was the district director. See, Mayo was your first district director. Well, he was from the international office. And then they put Jim Quinn in. And then from Jim Quinn, Jimmy Griffin. And Jimmy Griffin was one of the boys. Of course, he had been hurt in one of the plants, and we took Jimmy down to Columbus. Oh, that was later, way later on. But when Jimmy didn't even, I better not say anything about that. But Jimmy was one of the boys, and we stuck with him all the way along.
Who were the officers of this first union?
The first.
Excuse me.
There you go.
Jerry Beck was the first president of the Mahoning County outfit. And forget a lot of the names that stop it once. Joe Cummings was the president. And vice president, I can't remember who it is now, but I was financial secretary, treasurer, and right after that layoff, why, I was put in as president, and then I was president in, what was his name? It was the fellow that I was telling you about, that he was elected vice president. And we had a colored fellow that was secretary, but maybe she knows.
Your local was under the Mahoning County CIO Council, was it not?
That's right.
And who was the leaders of the Mahoning County CIO Council?
Well, Jerry Beck was the president, and if I'm not mistaken, Dave Treharn was the vice president. But as far as the other boys is concerned, I've forgotten their names. But we had a good bunch there, and all of the old timers was on the board of the of the council, and well, that one picture there that I showed you, they were the key men of the council at that time. There's myself, there's Jerry Beck, there's Dave Treharn.
You mentioned the layoff, and that was in 34.
Well, it was either the latter part of 33 or 34.
This is one of the reasons for putting the seniority clause into the contract in 35.
That's right. And after we got we didn't have no trouble in getting it into the contract because the vice president and the president both were pretty reasonable to talk to.
The reason the steel door was willing to sign the contract is that you had the members signed up in the plant to force them to sign the contract.
I didn't force them to sign it.
They
was willing to sign the contract because we did have the membership all signed, the employees all signed up with the exception of them three. And they told those three that they either should go along with the union, or if they didn't want to go along with the union, that they would put him in the office so that they wouldn't have to. Two of them signed up with the union, and one of them was put on the office for it. So, I mean...
Oh. Do you want her there?
No, take her.
Your first contract that was signed in 35 ran for a year. Then when did you sign the second contract?
Well, the contracts at that time ran year by year.
And what was the provisions of the second contract?
Well, the provisions of the second contract, and we went after more money, and there was no argument about getting the raise. We got the raise. I forget what else it was that we put in the contract.
Check off?
No, we asked for the check off, but we wasn't able to get it at that time.
Any safety provisions?
Oh, there was. We did have a lot of safety provisions that went in on the first and second contract, and practically every contract we signed after that, why we had the safety provisions that was talked about, and it was one place where it never came down to where we had the strike. The first time that we ever walked out was when we got orders from Pittsburgh to shut the plant down in sympathy with Little Steel.
That was in 36.
Well, that, wasn't there another one after that? Yeah, I think there was.
Did you shut down in 37 when Little Steel went out?
We was, no, I don't think they shut down. It's possible if we did. But the only time that we was shut down, that we shut down, was when we got orders from Pittsburgh to shut her down. And I got the call around about, around 8 o'clock at night, and I didn't even have to call anybody. All I went done was got in the car and went out, sit on the road, and when they started coming in, and I told them that they was coming in. Fellas were shutting her down in sympathy with Little Steel. And the only thing you got, need any help? No? Okay. And there were no arguments or anything else, because they were really union-minded.
Well, you had your contract at Steel Door signed, sealed, and working even prior before this little steel strike in 1937.
Well, we had working agreements with them before. Yeah, we had working agreements with the company even before that.
Did the little steel strike in 37 affect you at Peel Steel Door at all?
No, not too much. For we had steel in there for what we needed, and we worked right through.
And then you was ordered out in sympathy with Little Steel when they went out on strike in 40.
Yeah. And that was the only time that I had them out on, that I pulled any of them out.
How long were you out?
Just 2 days, I think it was.
What was the what effect did the communists have on the labor movement during your years in the labor movement?
Well, the commies agitated a lot, and but the council they tried to agitate a lot of stuff that. The council was able to keep them from doing. They was after strikes and to cause trouble around in the different parks and stuff. Southside Park, there was a kid or something that was knifed down there at one time, and the only local that had any communists in to amount to anything was 1330. And as I told you, they were instrumental in the NACP here in Youngstown.
It was instrumental in organizing the NAACP?
Yeah, that's right. And that was the officers of 1330.
And what mill was 1330?
Carnegie.
Who were some of these guys?
Well, there was Ted Dostal for one, Sammy Kamen for another, Weinstock for another.
He was naming the comics.
Yeah. Well, Ted Dostal and Myron Weinstock and Sammy Kamens, and well, there was two or three others in there. I forget the names right now. But they were the officers of the union.
Of what union?
1330.
Was Gus Hall in Youngstown?
Gus Hall was active up until, well, he was active up until around 36 or 37, someplace in there. And then he was called over to Russia.
How do you know they were communists?
They didn't hesitate to tell you that they were.
Just what type?
Come on, Bert. Go ahead.
Just what type of incidents did they create?
Well, they'd go around Well, they'd want to put this and that in the different motions that we made, and but we was, the council was generally always able to discredit anything that they brought up in the council. There was very few things that they got away with at that time. But some of them are on the steel workers' payroll right now.
Communists?
Yeah.
Would you
they
care?
Didn't hesitate to tell you.
Would you care to name who they are? Some of them?
Well, Sammy Timmons is one of them. He's a staff representative someplace. But as far as any of the rest of them, I don't know. I know that Myron Weinstock is still out around 1330 there. Whether he's one of the officers or what it is, I don't know. I've seen him out there when they go out to senior citizens.
Were the commies more interested in organizing union or just stirring up?
They was interested more in agitating different things that even in some contracts that they want to put stuff in contracts that they knew they had gone well that you couldn't get, but they still agitate to get it. And they did agitate around in different places, talking communism, and they had an office down on Watt Street there at one time. And they kept agitating the same as they're doing right now. And they tried to get their men in high places. Now, I think it was around in 1938 that we set up the Mahoning County Council. And that was when Jerry Beck was the head of it. And of course, they had their delegates to the council, and we had to take one of their delegates down to Columbus as well.
Did the communists create any violence connected with the labor movement?
They created some around the parks, and then they created the violence that was down around the stop 14, stop 5, and they were instrumental in the burning of Camel, or East Youngstown at the time.
What year was this, do you recall?
Well, that was when I was still down at the Republic.
1916,
19? Around 19, whenever they had their fire down there, I think it was around 1919.
Do you know any details of the steel strike in Little Steel in 37?
No, but for the simple reason that I wasn't tied up in it, but they were using the different halls. I was around to several of the meetings and heard some of the reports that was made, but I was not personally tied up in any of the trouble.
Other than being president of the local at Youngstown Steel Door, did you hold any other offices in the labor?
Oh, yes. I was the first president of the Political Action Committee. I was the chairman of the Mahoning District 26 Political Action Committee. I organized it, and the pictures that I showed you was all the men that were there. Paul Langley was my co-chairman down in Struthers. Al Shipka was my co-chairman in Camel, or East Youngstown. And Phil O'Toole was, he was secretary. And Dave Treharn was vice president.
What year was the Political Action Committee organized?
Political Action Committee was organized in...
Was it the early 40s?
Yeah, I imagine. Jerry Beck could give you the year a whole lot better than I can right now.
What was the purpose of the Political Action Committee?
Well, the Political Action Committee was set up so that we could have a voice in city government, county government, and talk to them and find out. Well, it was more or less a lobby. And we got good recognition, and we called the candidates in front of us, and we talked to them, and we asked them their views on certain things, how they felt about labor, and so on and so forth. And if they were favorable to the questions that we asked, I don't remember just what all questions we did ask them at the time, but if they answered favorably, why, we would endorse them. And at that time, we didn't put out no money towards their, but we did talk to the different locals and to endorse them. And a lot of the people that we endorsed were elected.
How was it financed?
Well, it was financed I think the local unions donated so much, but as far as the hall rent or any expenses that way, why, they didn't have none, because Local 2310 donated to them. They used the hall. They could use the hall at any time they wanted to. Any of the locals that didn't have a hall, why, they were welcome to come up in the 2310, and all they had to do was arrangements, and they'd have their nights.
Who were some of the political candidates that were successful through your endorsements?
Well, Paul Langley was one of them. Even after the powers that be went against him, why, we still elected him. And one that was defeated was Jack Hunter, our city mayor right now. And another one that was defeated was Duke Tablack. We didn't get behind Duke when maybe I shouldn't be telling that on there.
Paul Langley was sheriff of Tony County, wasn't he?
Yeah. Paul Langley, when he ran for sheriff, Mahoney County, he was endorsed by us, and Johnny Petula went along with us, and he was elected. But I don't know what happened that he wasn't I think it was the third term that he was after or something. Something went wrong with the Democratic Party.
Duke Tablet was a state representative?
Yeah.
Did you back George Ellis as state representative?
Yeah. Well, George was one of us.
What have been the significant accomplishments of the labor movement in the Mahoning Valley since you've been in it?
Well, the labor movement in the Mahoning Valley here has been a lot as far as helping to get things done in different ways, community chests and different organizations that needed contributions and stuff like that. They went along with them on that.
What was the major problems in the labor situation that made you organize in 30?
Well, the whole thing was the way that the company, some companies, treated the men that was in there working for them, and they didn't have no say anything. They couldn't say anything about safety, or they couldn't go against the boss, or if they did, they got fired. And just if they looked cockeyed at the boss, why, you better watch your foot if you get fired. But due to the labor unions coming in, it has changed a whole lot, where you can go in and talk to any boss. Of course, there are fellas that I've had things come up at our plant where they'd expect you to go in and take a grievance in, and grievance procedure was set down since the labor movement has come in, and you didn't have no procedure for grievance before outside that you'd go, you'd tell the boss about it. If he liked it, why, all right, and if he didn't, why, he'd fire you. So that was one of the accomplishments that the labor movement has done. Even if they didn't do anything else, that they have set it up so that you do have grievance procedures in all contracts.
What is your reaction to the statement that American labor is producing less, resulting in higher prices?
No, I don't think that that they're causing prices to be any higher. Of course, there is a limit to what you ask for, but a lot of times, unions went in and asked for half as much, again, more than what they expected to get, for the simple reason that they figured they was going to be chewed down on it. And I never had that trouble myself. Whenever I took a grievance into the plant out there, I didn't take it in if it was I'd take it in if it was a borderline grievance. But if you was wrong, I'd tell you you was wrong. I wouldn't take a grievance that way. But if it was a borderline grievance where you could have been a little bit wrong, but the company was a little bit wrong, I'd take it in. And 99 times out of 100, when I took a grievance in, I come back, it was one.
Who were the major, some of the major adversaries of labor in Mahoning County?
Well, old Jim Campbell was one, but Well, the majority of the plants didn't want labor, and they have to say that of what was what. Practically all of them didn't care too much about having unions in their plants. But there was one out here in Mahoning on Meridian Road that he wouldn't have a union in there. And but he gave them parties, and but they could go in and talk to him, and they didn't get fired. But he would not join our little union in. The outcome of it is the custom, a couple of guys got in there and started trouble in there. He just closed the plant down and shut her down and sold the property.
Was the press and the ministers anti-labor?
Well, the press always has been more and more or less anti-labor. You know that yourself. As far as the ministers concerned, no. There was a lot of the ministers that was for labor. That they figured that the men had some rights.
Is there any truth to the statement that Steele tried to keep industry out of the Mahoning Valley in order to control the labor market?
No, that isn't so. But right now, Steele is figuring on dropping a lot of their steel plants that is in Youngstown here, because they're antiquated, and the evolution of the stuff in the plants, everything's went mechanical now, where it used to take maybe 180 people to run a mill. Now it only takes about 30 or 40.
What has been your most enjoyable memories of your activities in the labor movement?
Well, a lot of them was the conventions. I had a lot of friends at the different conventions, and right here in town I had a lot of friends. And friends that I had then, I've still got now.
If you had to do it over again, would you be a participant in the labor movement?
You bet your life I would.
Would you name some people that would consent to an interview of this nature that are still living?
I think that Jimmy Griffin would.
Do you have any others?
And, well, if Dave Treherne was in town, I don't know whether he's in town or not. But if you could get a hold of Dave Treherne, he'd be a damn good man. And have you talked to, what the hell with Johnny? I think he's on here. He just retired. There.
Prior.
And you know, well, Trainer's dead. But, you know Johnny Panko? That's this fella. See, his name's now he's been active right along, and run into Ernie Kineski. Have you talked to Ernie Kineski?
Did the United Mine Workers help you organize the steel door in 35?
No, they didn't have no men in here, but they were with us 100%, because at one time, when I had in the contract, Dave McDonald had a 3-week vacation for 15 years. What the hell was the president's name? Johns. He says, well, if the steel workers don't want you, why, we'll take you. And that was District 50. But I was friends with some of them. They were in on our conventions when we first started out.
At the steel door, you didn't really run into any anti-labor resistance once you got the men signed up.
That's right. No, we didn't. And we had men in office that were not radical. We could go in and sit down and talk our points through. And Halsey and I were a good team, because Halsey more or less get the management steamed up a little bit, and then I'd pour the oil on and cool them down, and we'd get what we wanted. Halsey fight for what we wanted, and I'd put the oil on and get it.
The steel door at one time had a reputation due to unsafe working conditions as being a slaughterhouse. What's your reaction to that?
After the union got in there, it was cleared up, and right now they'd be, or right up to the time that I got out of there, they was right on the top as far as safety was concerned.
What year did you retire?
I retired in 64.
What was your reaction to the depression in the 30s?
Well, I wasn't working, and I tried to get some welfare help at one time, and I couldn't get none. I didn't have no money. I had two children, and had the wife and two children to support. Had a thrifty wife, and she knew how to manage. And what few dollars that we did get in, why, she managed on it. But it was tough going. And I think we learned something from it.
What did you learn?
We learned to be thrifty.
Did you work during the Depression?
I worked after I pulled a few strings. Yes, I got on with the aristocrats at WBA. And I was wiring the schools. We'd go in and tear the old fixtures out and rewire the schools for new lighting. And I think I got $90 a month. And some of them was only getting 60, I guess, but that's why I say we were the aristocrats at WPA. We got $90.
What year was this?
Couldn't tell you right now.
After 33.
Oh, yeah.
From 1930 to 33, where you working?
Well, I went to work right after they put WPA on. I couldn't get no welfare. But you had to sell your car, you had to sell this, you didn't have to have that in your house. So the outcome of it was that When WPA first started, they started digging ditches and putting sewers in, and that's what I had done. I helped put the sewer up through old axe factory run there and out to Meridian Road. That's as far as we went with it, and up through the field there and then out. But I was on that that winter, and in the spring they opened this other project up of wiring the schools and renovating the schools, and I was in on that. I got in on that then, and I was on that until they called me back to the steel door.
Well, from the time the Depression started until 33 WPA, were you married?
Yeah.
Well, what did you do for a livelihood then, during that period?
Well, I think I was working right up till, who the hell was I working for? I was working someplace.
What was the major problem to you in the Depression?
Well, to tell you the truth, it was getting enough money to feed ourselves and pay rent. You had to pay the rent, or you didn't have the, you was out, that was it.
Food and the rent.
That's right.
Do you think if there was a Depression today that the American people would accept it like you people accepted it back in the 30s?
I think they would have to. There's a lot of people. That's one of the things that that I've claimed right along. That right now, the commies are taking advantage of the whole damn works. And they're... Right now, they're trying to put through laws that they put through in other countries, where they went in and confiscated all the guns and ammunition, and if you had a gun, they shot you. That's what they're trying to do here. They're trying to register your guns. They know where they're at. They'll put a tax on them, and they'll come in and confiscate them. When they confiscate them, them people didn't have a damn thing to fight with outside of clubs or sickles or tools or something. And that's the way they have taken over every country that they have taken. But, what the hell was his name? He told, come right out of Flatford. He says, we're going to take you over and we ain't going to do no fighting in. Khrushchev, that's it. He told him.
Was there more friendly people during the Depression than there is today?
Yes, I think they were more clannish.
In what way?
Well, there was a lot of people, like in the families, they'd help one another. And there was some of them that they had a garden, and they both worked the garden, and then they split up the stuff, and you can't get that going today. I'd rather go pay 49 cents for a head of lettuce than they would get down in the garden and work it.
Do you think that Franklin Roosevelt and New Deal was good for Mahoning County?
Now, I'm going to be honest with you. As far as Franklin Roosevelt was concerned, he did do a hell of a lot for this country. When he seen the way things was going, boom, he put a clamp on it, everything. And that was one of the things that should have been done a few years back here, right now. And things would have been a lot different. But it hadn't been done. But there was things that Franklin Roosevelt sponsored and done that wasn't just kosher either. But who are we to say? It was the man was made that way, made up that way. And we all make mistakes. We don't realize it until after we've made them.
Overall, you think he was good for the Mahoning County?
He was good for the for Mahoning County. Because he did stop everything so that there were, you could make out. I know that after he put the freeze on everything, you could go into the store. I was making four something an hour when the Depression come on. And I went back to work for 55 cents an hour.
He was making $4 or something an hour?
Yeah.
So the Depression really didn't affect you when you was working?
Well, I wasn't making that during the Depression.
Before?
But before, yes.
So you went from over $4 an hour to 55
cents an hour. That's right. And we're damn glad to go back.
Were you aware of any corruption or political favoritism in the Mahoning County relief setup?
Yes, there was. There were some people that could get it and others that couldn't get it.
Why was that?
And that's what I told Frere was the name.
Frere.
Frere.
Ira Frere.
Yeah, I told him, I said, what the hell do I have to do? Go down cellar and get some set out of the furniture, black on my face. Well, called the cops, took me out.
What year was this?
Oh, I don't know, when they was over on Glenwood Avenue there.
32, 33.
He was in there somewhere. He called the cops to take me out. And your cop came up, who's a friend of mine. So he said, what the hell are you trying to do? I said, I'm just trying to get some relief. He says, hell, you might as well forget.
Did see any soup kitchens in Youngstown?
Not that I know of. The Lions there, the Salvation Army, they had stuff that way. They had soup kitchens, yes. And I don't know whether the government sponsored them or whether they didn't. I've never been, but I do know that they did give out bread and they did give out some stuff like that. And give people meals.
Was there much misery in Youngstown?
Yes, it was not too much though, because at that time there was a lot of people. Now, like the neighbors around there, they were all more or less clannish. If you needed something, they had to divide with you. But there wasn't too much that was rough.
In some respects,
you had to be in the common economist.
Had to be what?
You had to be an economist. You had to know how to economize.
In some respects, the WPA really helped the labor movement, though.
Yes, it did.
What way was it?
Well, it helped it in that it did give a lot of the fellas that were out of work in the steel mills, they give them enough that they could live halfway decent on and kept them so that they were still anchored here for the mills. That helped the union that way, that the men didn't leave here and go someplace else. Oh, there was some that left and went back home or something. The biggest majority of them stayed here.
But made them more appreciative if they could get a union.
That's right.
Mr. Humphrey, may the oral history department of the Youngstown State University use this interview in their research program?
Well, that's what they wanted, wasn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
I have a couple of papers for you to sign, a little bibliography, and a agreement that we can use it. And I thank you very much for interview. And this concludes the interview with Mr. Edward Humphrey. And this is the end of side two on tape one.